This is Radio Boston. I'm Tiziana Deering. The U.S. Supreme Court heard arguments today on a big question, one with major implications for U.S. workers. They're weighing whether federal civil rights law protects LGBTQ workers from workplace discrimination. For analysis, let's turn to WBUR senior news correspondent Kimberly Atkins, who was at the oral arguments today. Kimberly, welcome back to Radio Boston.
Hi, Tiziana.
Hi there. So, Kimberly, what was at the heart of today's arguments?
Well, at the heart of it is the Title VII of the Federal Civil Rights Act of 1964, which people know prohibits discrimination on the basis of things like sex and race and other protected classes. Today, the court considered two sets of cases. One asked whether the prohibition of discrimination on the basis of sex extends to sexual orientation, whether federal law prohibits people from being fired because they are gay or lesbian. The second set of cases involved that same question, but it involved transgender employees, whether that statute applies to them too.
So, Kimberly, you said there were two cases. Can you walk us through the main points for the lawyers arguing in both cases that these federal protections do extend both to sexual orientation and to transgender workers?
Well, the arguments in both were pretty straightforward and pretty similar. Essentially, the people representing these employees said, look, when you discriminate against someone because of their sexual orientation or because of their gender identity, you are, under the language of this statute, discriminating, quote, because of sex. That's what the statute says. And it necessarily applies in these cases because if, for example, a man who is gay is fired because of that, he's being treated differently than a woman in that same position who is also either in a relationship with or is attracted to men. The only difference between those two cases is that one is a man and one is a woman. That difference is sex. And the same thing for transgender employees. If somebody is identifying as a woman and that causes them to lose her job, in that case, if it was someone who otherwise, before they made a change in their identification, if their job was fine, then the only thing that has changed is that individual's sex, and that falls under Title VII. Of course, the employers disagreed, and they were backed up by the Trump administration attorney, who also saw things differently.
So we talked earlier today with Jansen Wu. He's the executive director of GLAAD. They do legal advocacy for the LGBTQ community and people living with HIV in New England. He underscored this argument that the 1964 Civil Rights Act clearly covers people's sexual orientation.
There's simply no way to fire somebody because they're a man who is attracted to other men, even though you would not have fired somebody who is a woman attracted to other men without taking into account their sex.
You pointed out that the government is arguing against. So what is the counter argument to that assertion that we heard in court today?
Well, essentially, the employers and the government attorney, the Solicitor General who was backing the employer's argument, say, look, when the Civil Rights Act of 1964 was passed, the lawmakers who passed that act did not anticipate that it would apply to people who were gay, or did not anticipate that it would apply to claims of transgender discrimination. There's nothing in the history of that act that shows that. They were talking about discrimination, treating a woman differently than a man or vice versa in a very straightforward way, and that the court, if it were to broaden its interpretation to include sexual orientation or gender identity, would be overstepping the bounds that are really left on in the realm of the legislature. The court would be overreaching.
Kimberly, these are momentous cases. This is a big day in the Supreme Court. Were there any moments that really stood out?
Yeah, there were a couple. I mean, at one point, Justice Sonia Sotomayor really went beyond the law of this and talked about the fact that this is a kind of discrimination that can be really awful to people, that people are beaten and really put in danger because of their sexual orientation or their sexual identity. Also, one of the conservative justices, Justice Neil Gorsuch, who was an appointee by Donald Trump, said said that this was a close case. You know, this is something that the court is expected to be divided along ideological lines. But he said on the one hand that on the statutory issue, it's close. But on the other hand, he made it really clear that he's uncomfortable with the court making a ruling that he said could lead to, quote, social upheaval if the court starts stepping in where the legislature could go. It also, the day also started out with some suspicious packages outside the court, which really caused the court to be a very different than usual. Protesters had to be shuttled away to another part of the corner near where the Supreme Court is. There were a lot of police cars around, and it was difficult for us to even get into the court. So it was a lot of drama and excitement on the outside. One last thing, Laverne Cox, the actress from Orange is the New Black, who has been very outspoken on these issues, she was in the court. She was present.
And Laverne Cox is a transgender actress. And that does that, you know, that you said drama, some excitement. We spoke today with Treyandre Valentine, who is the executive director of the Massachusetts Transgender Political Coalition, about the cases. Here is what he said to us.
It's a scary time for a lot of LGBT folks, and I think particularly for transgender folks. And that basically is trying to roll back rights that we've had in place for decades. So it is quite concerning.
Was there a sense of real concern and anxiety in the courtroom today among advocates, Kimberly?
Not in the courtroom. I mean, certainly outside where the protesters were, there was a lot of chanting and a lot of energy and emotion. Within the Supreme Court, it's a very staid and somber place. So it was really a focus on the law, making these very, sometimes very nuanced legal arguments within the courtroom. It was very quiet.
You mentioned Justices Sotomayor and Gorsuch. The balance of the power on the court has shifted. Justice Anthony Kennedy wrote the majority opinions in all four of the court's sort of major decisions protecting gay and lesbian people, including the 2015 ruling that established a constitutional right to same-sex marriage. He's gone, replaced by Justice Brett Kavanaugh. Do you feel like this change in the balance of power was reflected in the courtroom and in the questions that were being asked today?
Not really today. I mean, Justice Kavanaugh only asked one question, and it was a really technical question about the text of the statute. So it really didn't give anyone there any sense of where he is leaning. Certainly, it didn't make him seem like the new Kennedy and someone who can step in and really very carefully advance rights in within the LGBTQ realm. And aside from the one comment from Gorsuch, which has gotten a lot of chatter lately when he called this case close, I think we can really expect this to be a close case and really divided along the court's ideological lines, whether one of the more conservative justices will find some room to allow this statute to apply to gender identity and to sexual orientation. I think we'll have to wait and see.
That is WBUR senior news correspondent Kimberly Atkins. Kimberly, thanks for joining us.
Always a pleasure.
Let's add some legal perspective. We're going to bring in Rosanna Cavallaro. She's a professor at Suffolk University Law School. Rosanna, welcome back to Radio Boston.
Thank you.
Okay, let me just start by asking you, how do you interpret what happened in the court today?
Well, I think there are clues there that we don't want to overread, but we do have a report of Justice Gorsuch saying, but isn't sex at least in play here, and might that not be enough? So that, in addition to what you already observed, him describing it as maybe a close case, gives a little bit of hope to those who are wanting this more expansive reading of Title VII. But we also have him flagging the idea of social upheaval as a reason for not reading that term expansively. So I think we can't predict.
Social upheaval meaning that the court would create social upheaval if it chose to read the term expansively?
I assume that's what he was referring to, which is obviously sort of a troubling thing to throw into the mix. I mean, if the law requires this relief, then it requires it just as it did with Brown versus Board of Ed, or just as it did with Obergefell, the gay marriage case. I mean, there was a danger, if you want to characterize it that way, of people being unhappy with a court recognizing those rights. But, you know, those are those are the rights, then the Constitution provides them. Here it's statutory, not constitutional, but we take that as it comes. It's not a reason not to do it.
So it sounds like you don't think that's a fair or appropriate consideration for the justices to use in making their final decision on this.
No, definitely not. And I think the other piece here in terms of this sort of perfect storm is we not only have a new cast of justices, characters who are less inclined to read expansively and find the rights of gays and lesbians and trans persons, but they're also relatively conservative in terms of taking a language, a term from a statute, and stretching it to fit evolving understandings. So if the word is sex, Justice Gorsuch has said, well, we're going to interpret that, or we ought to interpret that, as it was understood at the time it was enacted, which is 1964. We today, of course, understand sex as a gender, as encompassing gender identity, sexual orientation, gender expression, but there's a strong motif there in 1964 understanding that it's biology and nothing beyond biology, which would mean a very different outcome in this case.
How big of a deal is this case? What's at stake?
Well, I mean, to obviously for gay and lesbian and trans people, it's an enormous thing that's at stake, and I think Justice Sotomayor adverted to that and placed it in this larger context of just what it means to be able to fire someone just because of who they are in the sense of their sexual orientation, that they are gay. They can lose their job. That's a terrible thing, and it's something that we want to be able to say should never happen. I think the question is whether the court is going to step up and say that cannot happen, or whether the court is going to punt and say it's not for us, it's for the legislature, it's for Congress. They need to add to the protections they've already created. They need to add to that list sexual orientation because of the centrality of that need for protection.
You just essentially noted part of the Trump administration's argument here, which is that this is better handled by Congress than the Supreme Court. Is there any merit to that argument in your mind?
Well, I mean, I think reasonable people can differ about that. My own view is that that's what the court is there for, is to make sure that the understanding of these statutory terms is appropriate and as expansive as it ought properly to be. But there are certainly people who say that these are really different institutional competencies, that if there is a popular will to recognize this protection, then it will be represented in an act of Congress. And so that's the tension there, whether the court will say that's what sex means. When Congress spoke in 1964, they meant that you can never consider a person's gender when you're making the decisions at issue here, employment decisions. If you're considering it in any way, then there's a remedy. It's already there.
I'm curious, historically, who tends to push the bounds of rights first? Is it the court in its findings, or is it Congress with legislation?
Well, that's a very nice question. I mean, I think we think of it as a back and forth. It always depends on the context, that there are times when Congress is pushing ahead and defining protections that have not been recognized by the court as yet. And then there's times when the court says, you know, Congress, you haven't moved quickly enough. And so we're going to say that, you know, for example, separate but equal is not equal. And so we're going to fix it. And I think we're in a time of tremendous social transformation, all to the good. And we're wondering now whether we have the right constituency on the court for the court to move ahead of Congress. Those statutes are apparently, there are statutes pending right now in Congress that would expand Title VII, make explicit what we now are sort of digging into the word sex to accomplish. They have not been passed yet. They're not likely to be passed under this administration. So it's right now in the hands of the court.
If the court were to decide that the Civil Rights Act does in fact offer protections to LGBTQ workers, what would the impact be here in the Commonwealth of Massachusetts?
Well, I mean, obviously that would mean that people could state a claim without saying anything beyond that. I think that a number of states have already recognized that protection and that right. That's part of why they're saying, well, obviously it can't be in the federal statute. Otherwise, why would states be creating that protection? That's not needed. So I think Massachusetts, relatively speaking, people are in a good protected position. But the other sort of fallout that may or may not evolve is that there's this sort of sense that religious groups, religiously affiliated employers may feel that if they're told they cannot make hiring, firing decisions based on sexual orientation, that that would then infringe their religious liberties. And so we throw another interest into the mix.
Rosanna Cavallaro, professor at Suffolk University Law School, thanks so much for joining us on Radio Boston.
Thank you.
Stay with us. Coming up, is there a rift in the Massachusetts Republican Party? We'll explore it. I'm Tiziana Deering. This is Radio Boston.